it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Thursday afternoon, September 11th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Cheap perks can backfire. Why thoughtful rewards matter more for employee loyalty. We'll talk about that in our next segment. But first, today's reading of the Consumer Price Index shows inflation accelerated last month, but likely not by enough to block a Fed rate cut in next week's decision. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Consumer prices rising at an annual rate of 2.9% in the month of August. Seasonally adjusted, that's 0.4% month over month. That's the biggest gain since January. How did this shape up with expectations?
Expected, the 0.4% increase that we saw month over month. And then we also saw, you know, it rounded down to 0.3% for core CPI, excluding food and energy, but it was pretty close to 0.4%. So, you know, overall, this is an indication that inflation is picking up and that tariffs are pushing prices higher.
Now, the question is, and I think this is the question that the Fed is trying to weigh as they make their interest rate decision, is what do tariffs represent in the overall inflation picture? Is this a one-off? Is this something that can be adjusted? Or is this the beginning of a bout of inflation that could take many months to tame?
I think it's probably the former, but no one is 100% positive of that. So the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, is ready to cut rates when they meet next week. They think that the hit to inflation is likely to be temporary, that we'll see a few months of impact and then inflation will start to slow again. But that's not guaranteed. And if we see that inflation isn't slowing by the time we get to late 2025 or early 2026, the Fed may not be able to cut interest rates as much as they would like, given the softness that we're seeing in the labor market.
Now, the Fed does have the dual mandate. We talked about inflation, which is above the 2% target. The other mandate is full employment. And the Labor Department reporting an increase in weekly unemployment compensation filings up to 263,000. That's the highest number since October of 2021. What does that mean for the job market, and what does that mean for the Fed?
Well, first of all, let's make it clear that this is just one week. And also, it was a holiday week. And holidays, we often see distortions in claims. So, but certainly, you know, when we look at the four-week moving average, that's been pulled up. And if we get a few more weeks of high claims, and that's an indication that the labor market, which is already soft, is weakening further. And so certainly, this is not good news from a jobs perspective. And it would be very difficult for the Fed if we have high inflation, yet at the same time, the labor market softening. High inflation would indicate that interest rates should be higher. A softening labor market indicates that rates should be lower, and so the Fed would need to balance those objectives.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up, skip the cheap perks. Meaningless rewards can insult and not inspire employees. We'll talk about that next.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Cheap employee perks can backfire if they come across as chintzy or feel meaningless. You risk insulting staff and might be better off skipping them entirely. We welcome in Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And one of the challenges that you may have as a supervisor is not only just motivating employees, injuries, but making them feel special and that you are conveying the proper amount of gratitude for a job well done. And that can be done through a free lunch, or it could be done through little trinkets and pieces of memorabilia, but they could backfire on you in some ways.
Absolutely. It's pretty clear when someone gives you some sort of an incentive or a perk or a gift, how much they cared about the intent of it, by the thought behind it, certainly the value sometimes. But to just go through the motions without any sincerity in the terms of the incentive is pretty obvious and has the opposite effect of what you wanted to do.
And some of these incentives that could potentially backfire on you include a $20 gift card, a novelty item, or a low-value trinket. Now, some of this stuff, I mean, I was just, you conduct a purge of your of a lot of stuff in a closet if you want to clean stuff out and organize your house. And I can't tell you how many times I've come across pen and pencil sets, coffee cups from old radio stations, a little pocket desk organizer that looked really neat at the time. Is this the stuff that could potentially rub employees the wrong way?
Sure. It's a tchotchke, particularly if it's the same, if it's the company brand and things that you probably can get anytime you need them because you need a pen or a pencil. That doesn't really have any meaning. You know, if it's not compensation, there's a lot of non-monetary things that you can do for your employees that recognition is probably one of the most powerful and least expensive things that you can do for an employee.
And then if you don't want to just hand out the tchotchkes, the pen and pencil set with the company logo, what are some things that you can do as a supervisor to say thanks that may not involve spending money on stuff?
A plaque is not that hard to put together. I remember years ago I went to a hardware store and got a little tiny hammer and gave it to somebody with a thing on it said to be used in case of glass ceilings, because she'd been promoted to a vice president. Simple things like that to just show, I understand you. I know what matters to you. I want you to know you matter to me. Going to lunch with some people, maybe not buying everybody lunch, but just going to lunch and making sure that you pick up the bill for one person that you want to recognize and spending some time talking about them and feeding them at that meal.
And then also just on a day-to-day basis, if you want to show your appreciation, you understand maybe an employee or employees are busy parents and maybe they have some activities with their kids that they have to be home for, you allow them to leave early. Or maybe you do throw in an extra day off or two along the way. Certainly concrete ways of saying thanks that don't necessarily cost a lot of money.
Absolutely. And knowing something about that family and what their unique situations are, you don't want to violate privacy acts relative to the human resources policies. But knowing that somebody is attempting to become a great soccer player and that their child has got a camp to go to and identifying, I said, hey, I understand he's got the camp this weekend. And they said, yeah, well, maybe you should go early today. Just those sorts of things that just show you understand that person and what they're about.
And once again, the overarching theme here, Rick, is that communication is the name of the game. It's talking and listening.
Yeah. If it doesn't matter, don't do it. If it matters, do it right.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, take a mini retirement now. Pause, recharge, and then refresh your career.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Why wait decades? A mini retirement lets you pause work now to focus on travel, projects, or family. Taking extended time off or a sabbatical can refresh your career without quitting. Joining us now to discuss is Ed Gjertsen, certified financial planner and founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago, past national president of the Financial Planning Association. Find him online at engagewealthgroup.com. Ed, thank you for joining us today. And we have talked about taking a sabbatical in the past. We have also talked about test driving your retirement in the past, just giving yourself a little taste of what retirement life looks like. How does a mini retirement differ from those two concepts?
You know, the concepts are sort of interrelated, Rob. We are big proponents of balance, and that's kind of what we're talking about now. So when it comes to our clients' lives and finances, balance is the key, because we've seen individuals who spend a lifetime focusing on just saving and little else, and why that might seem reasonable, we stress there is much more to life than the size of your portfolio or bank account. So looking for opportunities to sort of hit the pause button and breathe a little bit goes a long way in terms of just kind of focusing in on that future, but also rewarding yourself for all the days and in and outs of being a good steward of your finances.
Now, if this idea appeals to you as we talk about it today, what are some benchmarks you need to have before you can think about it in a realistic fashion?
Yeah, so allowing yourself that flexibility, and again, not all your listeners have the ability to kind of be able to take, you know, weeks or months off, but for those who can, you just want to pre-plan for that, right? Financial planning. You want to make sure you've got assets in reserve, that if you take time off, obviously you can pay your bills and things like that. So again, the thoughtful approach of just planning that break, so just not having it occur in one moment, but, you know, maybe next year you say, I'm going to take a couple weeks or 3 or 4 weeks off. What are you going to need in terms of additional income or resources in order for that to happen? So it's a little thoughtful thinking and planning ahead of time that can really help you get that good core base in place. So again, when you take that time off, you're not stressing about money.
And how long of a sabbatical or a retirement are we talking about here? Is this a month off, 6 months off, a year?
It's a great question, Rob, and it kind of goes back to your day job, right? Again, like I had mentioned earlier, not everyone has the ability through their work to take a month off. So if you've got 5 days worth of vacation, be intentional about that. Maybe you go on a trip, or maybe you do some self-reflection in terms of your path in your career, your industry. While there's some folks in jobs that get sabbaticals every 4 or 5 years, and you can take months off. And again, it kind of comes back to the job that you have in place and what opportunities you have. But again, it's the intentionality, Rob, of that planning and making sure that you carve time out for yourself in bringing that balanced approach to life. Again, saving sounds great, but again, reward yourself along the way for being a good steward of your money.
And then what should you learn over the course of this time off about yourself, about retirement, and possibly, you know, how you can go back to work refreshed and recharged?
There's a lot of studies that say taking a mental break from your day-to-day is very important. And again, whatever you prioritize in your life, right? If you just want to take a mental break and kind of reassess your career, that's kind of one thing. If you want to take a mental break and take a good inventory of your personal finances to make sure you're on path, everyone has their own break and own break in mind. But ultimately, make sure it's a valued time. Again, if you've got such a limited time off, make sure you're using the best and highest use of that time for your own personal benefit.
Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. Markets are higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley Financial in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. And looking at today's market activity, the Dow up 1.25%, leading the way. It seems like investors are experiencing some pre-interest rate cut exuberance today.
Yeah, I think that's in large part the case. So I think concern coming into today's CPI report really sat with the fact that if this CPI was significantly higher than consensus estimates, then that might put a bit of a damper on the ability for the Fed to cut rates for the first time in a couple of years here at their next meeting, which is next week. So with the CPI coming in almost exactly on the nose to consensus estimates, I think that really saw the market breathe a sigh of relief. I think it's pretty well known that the Fed's going to cut by at least 25 basis points at the next meeting and probably go ahead and cut once again at the October and December meetings. So we may have 75 basis points of cuts coming out of the Fed funds rate before the end of this year.
Now, the Fed cut by a half a percentage point at their policy meeting last September, and that did catch a lot of people by surprise, including the bond market, which popped almost immediately, wiping out whatever interest rate savings consumers may have experienced from a half a percentage point rate cut. But today, though, it looks like the 10-year yield is following along. We even had a three handle for a little while this morning. So what can we anticipate when the Fed actually does make the announcement next week?
Yeah, that's such a great point. And that's exactly what happened last September. The Fed cut by 50 basis points, trying to catch up to what appeared to be a slowing labor market at that juncture, which, you know, in actuality, as we've looked at some of the revisions, was the case. I think the only reason they may go 50 basis points at this meeting and how the market reacted to that is because we've seen such a significant rollover in labor. After the July jobs report and all the revisions that were made post that, the labor market data has just gotten increasingly worse. So if, in fact, they had that July data when they met in July, it was 2 days afterwards, unfortunately, they probably would have cut then. So I feel as though the Fed's got enough evidence to cut by 50 basis points. But to your point, I don't think they want to surprise anybody. They've got three meetings coming up, one now, one October, one December. They'll probably get 25 basis points each. And the 10-year will likely react in a more normalized fashion now that there won't be any surprises out there.
Now, the labor market weakness is real. The numbers that are coming in are certainly nowhere near as robust as some of the figures we saw 6 months ago, a year ago, or 2 years ago. But there's another, the other side of that, though, is that corporate earnings still strong. There's no real sign of weakness in the consumer just yet. And this is with 900,000 jobs that apparently didn't exist. So does that paint? What does that say about the overall economy?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I will tell you this. With what we know about the workforce population and its growth, we think that you need to create between 50 and 75,000 jobs a month to keep unemployment from rising. So that said, we're creating about 30,000 jobs a month. So that's not enough, and unemployment's going up. The reason that that number at 50 to 75,000 is lower this year than it was last year is twofold. We don't have as much immigration, and we see 11,000 baby boomers retiring on a monthly basis. So we clearly need to create fewer jobs to keep employment in check. We just haven't got to that place where we understand exactly what that is, but I would agree with you on everything else. The market's at an all-time high. Fiscal financial conditions are very, very solid, and the consumer, according to last month's retail sales, is in pretty good shape. So I think the Fed's cutting to get in front of even more weakness in the labor market.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, deep fakes spread fast, blurring the truth after big news.
It's 60 minutes of financial planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
After major national stories, we often see a surge in misinformation, so-called deep fakes, fueling confusion when emotions and uncertainty run high. Joining us to discuss is Matt Wren, tech expert and founder of VRAR in Chicago. Matt, VRAR Chicago in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today on the program on Technology Thursday. And of course, yesterday, the shooting and killing of conservative activist and Chicago area native Charlie Kirk at a college campus in Utah was the latest in a very familiar ritual in this country when it comes to a breaking story. A shooting takes place, whether it's at a workplace or a school or a college campus, and then social media goes to work to muddy the waters about what we know or possibly implicate people that the poster simply doesn't like, and sending online mobs in that particular direction. And what can be done as a honest news consumer to make sure you're seeing the actual information and not someone who's trying to just draw attention to themselves?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me back, Rob. Wish it was for a better reason, frankly. But I mean, the thing you have to consider is there's sort of a double-edged sword. We want information quickly. We want information as soon as it's possibly available. But at the same time, having, rapid access to this information, having immediate access in some cases to literally firsthand videos of a horrific event, that comes with a cost. And the cost is, number one, there's definitely going to be people who are faking the information and, who are doctoring the videos. And so you do have to be very cautious of the information that you're receiving and how accurate it is. You kind of have to take everything you're looking at with a grain of salt, especially with the capability of AI videos today. You don't know if what you're seeing is actually a firsthand video or an AI regeneration. So from a consumer perspective, I mean, the best thing you can really do is just honestly slow down a little bit. Don't take everything you see at face value. Realize that some of it may be fake, some of it may not be fake. I really personally kind of wish that I saw the social media companies, to a certain degree, at least filtering out even the most graphic of these videos, because I don't think you really need to show those. I think they should be filtering that a little bit more. It doesn't really add a whole lot of value for people to see that when it comes to just understanding what actually happened.
Now, two trends that I saw yesterday that don't really involve deepfakes, but they do involve just the emotional nature of social media engagement. That the reason why people share things, the reason why people post, is they want that dopamine hit. They want the validation that comes with attention, with likes and shares. And the first thing that came out yesterday that was ultimately proven to be incorrect was they had a picture of an older man being arrested, and they said that was the suspect. Well, that was not the suspect at all, and that was debunked maybe 40 minutes later, but it had already gone around the world several times. And the other thing, and I'm starting to see this today, is in the AI slop category, is that Facebook accounts are sharing very obvious AI pictures of Elon Musk offering to pay the funeral expenses for Charlie Kirk's family, or a player on the Minnesota Vikings offering to pay the funeral expenses for Charlie Kirk's family, both of which completely untrue, but are getting a lot of traction on Facebook. And there's not a whole lot of effort into actually making them look plausible, but people like it because, again, it triggers that emotional response.
And that, again, that's part of the problem right now with the concept of going viral on social media, is the concept of going viral on social media in and of itself is the goal. There's no actual goal of being accurate. There's no actual goal of being correct. It's really all just about getting out there, having your story be the one that everybody hears and that everybody sees and that people are sharing. And so, yeah, it would be nice if there was a way to, you know, determine what is true and what's not. Again, you're able to tell really quickly from various sources, is this accurate? Is it not accurate? So like I said, when you see those first reports, those first news, you're seeing it come up on your friend's social feeds and not necessarily from a news source, you should question it. You should think twice. Is this real? Is this actual validated information, or did somebody just post something so that they'd get a lot of hits?
In other words, stay frosty and just keep your head on straight. Matt Wren, tech expert and founder, VRAR Chicago, in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, test drive tips, what to check before you buy.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
When buying a car, a test drive is a great way to get a feel for a vehicle, from checking acceleration and brakes to comfort with control and features. Joining us with some tips on making the most out of a test drive is Jeff Gilbert, CBS automotive reporter based in Detroit. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. And what a well-timed segment, Jeff, because I have just come off of several weeks of test driving cars before we actually pulled the trigger on a Chevrolet EV. And this is just me, Jeff, as a guy who's worked in radio for longer than I care to admit. The first thing I do when I get in that car is making sure that my employer comes in clear as a bell on both AM and FM, and it often confuses the guy from the dealer. He's trying to explain all the cool features of the car, and I'm like, wait a minute, 780, I gotta make sure it sounds good before we pull out of the lot.
Hey, always a good move, and you know, we radio nerds all do the same thing, but you know, we're talking to the vast majority of people who you want to make sure that maybe they keep it on WBBM, but they have a few other things they want to do as well. And I would say the most important thing is, you said test drives, and that's the key. Don't just drive one vehicle and be wowed by it. Do your homework. Find out what the competitive vehicles are in that area. And also, you know, talk to the dealership about what kind of deals there might be. You might go into the dealership wanting one vehicle, finding another one that you think is better. You know, the basics during the test drive. I mean, how does it feel? How are the brakes?
make sure you also check out the screen in the middle. Some are extremely complex. Some are easier to use. Make sure it's something that you can be comfortable with.
Yeah, that's very important you bring that up, especially when it comes to the tech in the car, because it is getting so much more complicated. And even though some makes and models are going back to the more tactile experience, they're bringing back the buttons so you don't have to take your eyes off the road while you're changing the radio station or turning up or the air conditioning up or down. There are other cars where it's a lot more complicated. There is a particular Kia model that if the surface for the entertainment system and the air conditioning, it's the same thing, but you have to toggle back and forth. And on that test drive, you have to make sure you're comfortable with that if you want to move forward.
Exactly. And since I test drive virtually a new vehicle every week, I can tell you some of these systems can be quite maddening. In fact, I just wrote a review coming up of a Land Rover vehicle, and they're among the worst. Chevy, the vehicle you bought, is among the best. But there's also a booby trap in Chevy EVs and GM EVs. They don't allow you to use Apple CarPlay, which is a drop-dead deal for me. So those are the kind of things you have to decide among your, you know, for yourself. Is that a drop-dead issue for you, or is it not? What does your vehicle have? What does the competitors have?
Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive correspondent based in Detroit. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.